was the night before Christmas when all through the lab, not a tech was stirring, not even in the fab. The daughter cards were hung by their headers with care in hopes that St. VPX would soon be there. Well, hello, my friends. This here is Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. And yes, we are diving deep into the world of VPX this week with a whole team from Elma Electronics. We are chatting about the future of VPX, the challenges of signal integrity in VPX backplane designs, and why your simulation is only as good as your assumptions. Let's go. All right, I've got Dave Caserza with me from Elma Electronics. So, for my audience who may not know, what is Elma all about?
So, Elma's a global electronic packaging company. We build chassis and backplanes and even equipment racks and also sell component level products. We also will take those packages and build integrated computing systems where we take computing boards and add them, disk drives, operating systems, and provide a fully tested and warranted platform so the customer can get to work right away.
All right, Mike. So let's talk about VPX. Now, you gave a presentation at ETT this year called Where is VPX Going and Why? So I am intrigued. Mike, where is VPX headed in the future?
So the big change for VPX is that all of the slot profiles have been mostly empty space. In other words, most of the pins in VPX slots up to now have been user-defined pins with just a small portion of them set up for the expansion plane, the data plane, and the control plane. But now we're adding to that specific locations for video, for USB, for SATA, for XMC is being provided in the slots where before it was, you know, if you had XMC, it went out to defined area, but it wasn't exclusive so that nothing else could be there. Right. Now we're having slots that are defined completely. And this is because the military, the three branches have gotten together and they want to be able to buy some standard cards like single board computers that are truly interchangeable in the slot. Right. I think people before, one of the reasons they gave for not wanting to conform to somebody else's pinout is, you know, they needed the innovation, they needed the ability to do things differently. Well, right. My contention, I didn't make a big point of it, was that where you locate SATA or USB or video on your card is not a real product differentiator. Yeah. It's not your innovation. True. The innovation's, you know, is in the card, your architecture within the card. So, but no card vendor would ever be willing to change their layout to match their competitors, because they probably would find they needed a new job and they would hope the competitor would hire them. Right. But now, because the end customer with a lot of buying power is saying, all three branches are going to buy boards to this particular pinout, and they may be different boards, they may be high compute boards with FPGAs on them, but they're going to be able to go into the same slot. And I think that's going to be, obviously, it's good for the end user like the military, but I think the same thing is going to make it make VPX more interesting to the rest of the industry as well. So I think it's actually a really good thing, and we're lucky to have such a huge customer who can actually drive this change.
All right, Mike, now it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, last year we talked about beekeeping and how you were not making so many friends in your neighborhood with your bees. How's the beekeeping going?
So I'm not doing any beekeeping right now because they did come to me from the HOA Association, and we have a greenway committee. We have actually a whole section of our development totaling 30 acres that's registered with the National Wildlife Foundation. And we've worked with Mount Cuba, which is a like Longwood Gardens. It's a former DuPont estate, but they have wildflowers that's not like conservatories. Yeah. So I've done some things with the Greenway Committee as they've gotten qualified to be now a National Wildlife Registered Habitat. And right behind my house, there's 15 acres of natural habitat that I border right onto. They came to me to see if I was willing to set up a hive for the community so they would have pollination. I said yes, but then they took it to the builder who still is in control. They're still selling new houses. They said no way. So I'm waiting until the development's a little further built out. Even though those new houses are like five blocks from me,
right,
but I'm still hopeful that in 2 years,
okay,
I'll be able to have bees again.
All right, I'm going to check with you again in 2 years,
okay,
about your bees. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Mike.
You're more than welcome.
And now it's time for a little news you may have missed. MIT is at it again edition. This time, they're bringing Tiny back. That's right. Researchers at MIT have recently created a super shrinking system that can produce 3D nanoscale versions of much larger custom-made objects, reducing them to around 1,000th the size of the originals. Okay, so this is how it's done. These researchers have been able to create any shape and structure they want by patterning a polymer scaffold with a laser. Now, that polymer scaffold is actually put together by polymer layers of polyacrylate. And then the whole kit and caboodle gets shrunk down using a special technique called implosion fabrication. That's good stuff. Sounds like a great band name, doesn't it? So, this implosion fabrication involves embedding the structures in a special type of expanded hydrogel. So, it's actually this hydrogel that's super important here. It includes a specific acidic mixture that allows the material to contract so much. And get this, they have also been able to attach other kinds of molecules to these structures, giving these researchers more control over the materials and their ultimate unique creations. So that's right, MIT has now created a real-life Honey, I Shrunk the Kids with a little help from hydrogel. But what are we actually going to use this technology for? Well, MIT contends that this new technology could revolutionize how we analyze properties of light and could eventually be used to create medical equipment or even more advanced lenses for smartphones. Now, one of the keys to this technology is that ability to attach different structures to that shrunken material. Edward Boyden from MIT points out, this could be a quantum dot. It could be a piece of DNA. It could be a gold nanoparticle. This research is also turning nanostructure technology on its head in a lot of ways. Not only can it work with a variety of different materials, but this new technology can also work in three dimensions, which previous nanostructure creations could not. Samuel Rodriguez, researcher at MIT, explains this technology quite well. He says, people have been trying to invent better equipment to make smaller nanomaterials for years. But we realized that if you just use existing systems and embed your materials in this gel, you can shrink them down to nanoscale without distorting the patterns. Very cool. Okay, so right now there are some issues with scale. The team is able to currently create objects about 1 cubic millimeter in size with a resolution of 50 nanometers. And up to 1 cubic centimeter with a resolution of about 500 nanometers. So if you're curious and want even more information about this super cool new incredible shrinking system, straight out of Ant-Man, right? I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com. Oh yes, and one more thing before I go. I want to remind everyone that you have another opportunity to win our special giveaway this month. Maybe you're interested in a Hitchhiker's Guide to PCB Design t-shirt. Oh, yes. I'm giving away a limited number of these super cool t-shirts this month. So if you want to enter to win, just fill out a tiny little form and I will announce the winners in my January 4th Fish Fry broadcast. And don't forget to click that link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And don't forget, our Twitter handle is EEJournalTFM. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, hosted by me, you know. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out our Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of December 21st, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.